The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother.
This weekend, the establishment will honor a revolution. Gil Scott-Heron would have loved the irony. I'm Joel Meyer in today for John Schaefer, and coming up on Soundcheck, before the Grammys acknowledge the pioneering career of the late Gil Scott-Heron, we'll find out what a new posthumous memoir is telling us about the life of the singer, writer, and activist. And later... This 1994 protest song from the Cranberries dealt with the Troubles in their native Ireland. It also became a hit. After a decade on hiatus, the Cranberries are reuniting to release a new album called Roses. They'll play songs from it live in our studio. All of that on Soundcheck right after the news.
The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General
Abel. A new chapter in the story of Gil Scott-Heron. This is Soundcheck. I'm Joel Meyer, one of the show's producers, in today for John Schaefer. And coming up on the show, the Irish band The Cranberries are about to release their first album in a decade. We'll get a preview when they play live in our studio. But we'll start with this song, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, by the late Gil Scott-Heron. It's probably the best-known work in the career of this singer, writer, and spoken word artist who died last May at age 62. This weekend, his family will accept a Lifetime Achievement Grammy on his behalf, and that award comes on the heels of Gil Scott-Heron's just-published memoir called The Last Holiday. In a moment, we'll open the phones, and we'll talk with a musician who worked with Gil Scott-Heron, but first... Linnell George reviewed the memoir, The Last Holiday, in the Los Angeles Times, and she joins us by phone from L.A. Welcome, Linnell.
Hi, Joel.
Well, the big question here is, this memoir, as with so many memoirs, how much light does it shed? How much is in there that we didn't know about Gil Scott-Heron already?
Actually, there's probably a lot we didn't know, but perhaps what you might be expecting to learn, which is a point-to-point story about what happened may not be there. But we learn about how he began, the pieces of a man came together.
That's the album, the 1971 album.
Right. Well, but literally we learn it. How he grew up, what his interests were, how he was able to, how he forged himself as a songwriter and a thinker, through his life. So that's what we learn more than the typical, beginning to end story arc.
You know, a few years ago, Bob Dylan published his Chronicles memoir, and it seemed to appeal to more than just Bob Dylan fans. It was another sort of episodic memoir that was kind of all over the map, not told in a linear way. Is this book going to appeal to people above and beyond Gil Scott-Heron fans?
I absolutely think so, because what it really is it's sort of a look at, it looks at the Black migration and that period of the 60s where when people were moving out of the South. And actually, Heron was experiencing the last whiffs of Jim Crow. He actually integrated his junior high school in Jackson, Tennessee. He was living with his grandmother and a great aunt. And so you get to see him walking through the South during that period and learning these stories from the older African-Americans in the community, people who worked for the railroads, people who took in wash, his grandmother took in wash. So it's a real, it's a history of the South and a history of Black American South, but it's also a history of music. And he's looking at all the places that he... of blues in Memphis and how that influenced him before he got to the city and began, investigating jazz. So it is a look at, history, African-American history, American history, the history of music.
Linnell, it sounds like you maybe are a little surprised by what you found in the book. What were you expecting before you cracked the spine?
I guess because it says on the cover, a memoir, I was expecting a memoir that was somewhat linear, that told us, that connected the dots. Of course, so many of us at the end, we were seeing a different Gil Scott-Heron from the one that we had been introduced to on record. and, you know, who was forthright and who was the strong symbol of the new Black American man. And, you know, suddenly you're hearing these news stories about him serving time for cocaine possession or and the image himself, you know, was so different. And so I thought that we would get a sense of what happened, you know, there. And you don't get that in this book. That's not what this book is. It's really a collection of memories that are about, that end before we get to that place in his life.
I'm talking with the journalist Linnell George. She reviewed Gil Scott-Heron's memoir, The Last Holiday, for the Los Angeles Times. So, Linnell, it sounds like we don't hear about that very dark period of Gil Scott-Heron's life, the last maybe 10 years or so. But in this book, which it's not a doorstop by any means, few hundred pages, he spends about a quarter of that book talking about Stevie Wonder. Why is a memoir from Gil Scott-Heron about Stevie Wonder?
It's a great question. That's the last holiday of the title, and he wanted to dedicate the book to his friend, the musician Stevie Wonder, because he felt that Stevie Wonder didn't get the right amount of credit for really working to get Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday to be recognized as a national holiday. And so he started this book originally as just a collection of memories about being on that tour with Stevie Wonder, promoting that record, and then eventually getting involved with him politically to try to push the holiday. So there are these great scenes about them on the road and about their friendship through the years and how he came to work with him. So that's how the book started, and he actually wanted it to be a third-person account he was bearing witness to this moment. So it was a third-person account of Stevie's tireless work, but the book evolved over time.
That's the journalist Linnell George. In a second, we're going to talk with someone, a friend of Gil Scott-Heron, who actually saw many of the manuscripts before this book was published. And, you know, we were just talking about in the book, Gil Scott-Heron writes about one of his African-American heroes, Stevie Wonder. This song, a tribute to two others. It's called Lady Day and John Coltrane.
Somehow, somewhere you lost your way. And if you don't get a help quick, you won't make it through the day. Or could you call on Lady Day? Could you call on John Coltrane? Now, cause they'll watch your troubles, your troubles, your troubles, your troubles away.
Gil Scott-Heron and the song Lady Day and John Coltrane from the 1971 album Pieces of a Man. The journalist Linnell George telling us that Gil Scott-Heron's memoir The Last Holiday, very much the story of Pieces of a Man and that sort of concept. Let's bring in one of Gil Scott-Heron's friends. Larry McDonald is a New York-based percussionist who played with Scott-Heron for 30 years, partly during that time as a member of Gil's band The Amnesia Express. Larry, welcome to Soundcheck.
Glad to be here, Joel.
So, as I mentioned just a few minutes earlier, you had a chance to see some of the manuscripts for this book, right?
Yeah. When he started writing it, I was in the band then, and like after a while, I was the only one who was living in New York, you know. So I'd go by him from time to time, and every time he wrote something, he'd give it to me and read, you know, and go back. He'd give me four more pages. You know, then I go back and he's thrown all that out the window and start again. And
this wasn't necessarily 5 years ago. This is going back.
No, oh yes, it's going back quite some time. Yes.
And you, when did you start playing with him?
In 1981, I joined him after the Reflections album. He had asked me to help him to make Storm Music, which was on that album.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted it to sound like a reggae, so.
Did you have a connection over Jamaican music?
Me?
Yes. You and Gil.
Yeah, pretty much, because I met him before when he was with the I met him before I joined the band when he was doing the Stevie Wonder tour. I was doing an album in his producer's studio. So it went on, the tour started back up. He took me over to the whatever center it was in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was after that that they asked me to come in and do the surgery on that tune. And when I was finished, he said, "Would you like to come on the road with me behind that album?" And it was almost a 30-year ride.
So, and over those 30 years, he shared with you this this project, this book, The Last Holiday. I mean, Gil Scott Heron was on Soundcheck a couple of years ago, and even then, just about a year and a half before he died, he was still working on it, still talking about it. What did he tell you about what he wanted this book to be?
Well, actually, I thought at first that The Last Holiday was going to be a project in itself, and the other stuff was just... You see, I remember him writing it in the third person at first.
In the third person?
Yeah. And,
it's definitely in the first person now.
Yeah. he was convinced of the benefits of that. So a lot of the stories are familiar to me, a little bit different, you know, but it was a pretty good book. And as far as explaining, you know, his connection with Stevie and Stevie's connection with it, because he was always on about that Stevie never did get, you know, his propers for
the acknowledgement for the work on
for the work on that holiday,
on the Martin Luther King
yeah.
holiday. Linnell George, a contributor to the Los Angeles Times, what do you know about the birth of this book and it finally coming out last month?
Well, apparently, is exactly what Larry was saying. The publisher, there's a note that comes with the book for reviewers that explains what happened with the book, that he had started writing the book back in 2004, in the 1990s, and bits and pieces of it, and he was sharing it with people. And it evolved after some discussions with the publisher, and he asked him if he could take it out of third person and try writing it first person, because writing it in third person and trying to go all the different places he was trying to go with it was becoming more difficult. So he agreed to do that work on the book and try to turn it into something else. And in talking about himself, he realized that he had to talk about his family, because when you talk about yourself, you talk about where you came from and the people that shape you as well.
That's Linnell George. She's a journalist who reviewed the book that we're talking about, The Last Holiday, for the Los Angeles Times. Here in the studio with me is Larry McDonald, the percussionist that played with Gil Scott Heron for 30 years. Larry, you'd mentioned before that one of your first collaborations with Gil was on the song Storm Music from Reflections. What was your first impression of Gil, and what was he like to work with?
Well, I liked working with him because he seldom told you what to play, you know. He'd more tell you what not to play. But, you know, you had the kind of freedom that you could bring a lot of the stuff to the music, you know. And the musicians that were with me in the Amnesia Express were different from the Midnight Band.
The Midnight Band comes before the Amnesia Express.
So we were playing the same songs, but I guess because of our collective attitude towards the material and the freedom that he gave us, the songs came out different, like Home Is Where the Hatred Is became The Other Side, and, you know, stuff like that. So he, like, completely looked at them in a completely different way than he did with the Midnight Band. So, you know, I was happy to be part of that, you know, could jolt him from complacency, so to speak.
And, you know, Gil wasn't necessarily like a musician like Prince, where he sort of did it all himself. He was heavily collaborative, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, he always said, you know, I brought you in to play percussion, so I let you do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, you had mentioned a little bit earlier the 1981 album Reflections and the song Storm Music, which is, I think, when you sounds like you first put your heads together. Let's take a listen to that track. This is the song Storm Music.
Justice is coming on the winds of the storm. We resist in the presence for those who are yet unborn. Our freedom is spreading its wing like a bird, and the message it carries has got to be heard. Oh, what's that music? It's playing on the radio. What's that music?
Storm Music from 1981, a serious Caribbean feel to that song, and that album from Gil Scott-Heron. In a moment, we're going to talk more with our guests, the percussionist Larry McDonald and the writer Linnell George, and we're going to want to hear from you. What do you think of the late Gil Scott-Heron? What do you think of his words and his music, and were you inspired by him? You can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on the soundcheck page at wnyc.org/soundcheck. And coming up a little bit later on today's show, the Irish rock group The Cranberries are back, and they join us in the studio for a preview of their upcoming album. This is Soundcheck.
Fire and soul to lose yourself, to lose control.
Don't you know, New York was killing me. Yes, I was standing there and dying.
This is Soundcheck. I'm Joel Meyer, one of the show's producers, and today for John Schaefer. More now in our look at the career of this guy, Gil Scott-Heron, the late singer, poet, novelist, pianist, and spoken word artist. Is going to be celebrated at the Grammys this weekend. And a memoir called The Last Holiday was published last month, a work that was a long time in the making. In the background, you're hearing the last studio album that Gil made, titled I'm New Here. It was released in 2010. Once again, I'm joined in the studio by the percussionist Larry McDonald, who worked with Gil Scott-Heron for 30 years, and the journalist Linnell George, who reviewed that book, The Last Holiday, for the LA Times. You know, Linnell, in the book, it's kind of interesting. You know, many of us think of Gil Scott-Heron as a musician. We think of his albums. But we start to see in the book that maybe music wasn't his first calling. We hear about him as an activist, a creative writer. How many different Gil Scott-Herons are there?
There were many more than
Larry's
I
laughing,
knew
by the way.
About. I was really impressed, and also then at the same time, surprised and not surprised, because it all made sense in a way. But yeah, he was a novelist, he was a poet, he was a professor, he taught creative writing for a while.
He sort of talked his way into that creative writing job at John Hopkins.
He absolutely did. He talked his way into so many different things. And you have the sense at the end that he probably could have talked his way. There's so many more things he could have done, too, with his life. And that music was just sort of something that he wandered into because it made sense at the time. But I was just, you're just struck by how many hats that he wore. And there's this one great story about how he shut down his university. His collaborator, Brian Jackson, they went to Lincoln University together, and one of the members in the band had died. I mean, not in school.
An asthma attack, I believe.
Of an asthma attack, because there wasn't proper medical facilities on campus. And Gil Scott Heron organized the students and shut the university down for many days and until the administration met their demands. So you just think, wow, okay, well, there it was right there in action.
I have something I want to play for Larry in just a second, but let's take a quick call. Milton is calling from Brooklyn. Milton, welcome to Soundcheck.
Yes, thank you very much. How are you doing this afternoon?
Well, not too bad. What's your reaction to Gil Scott Heron? What does he mean to you?
Well, he means so much to me. He was a great poet, a great balladeer. He had a nice song called Morning Thought on Reflection, which was a very beautiful song. He also had another great album called Secrets, which had a song called Show Business, how you can be a millionaire without a dime and not have anything. So he had so many great songs. We Almost Lost Detroit, about Cameron Silkwood, and just so many great songs, Johannesburg, The Bottle.
Milton, how did you encounter his music? And if I can ask, how old are you?
Okay, I'll be 49 in March. I had older brothers and sisters. Went to America. When I came of age, I brought his albums from on Arista Records in the early 80s. I first saw Gil at A.B. Fisher Hall. Then I saw him at the Bottom Line in 81 when Ralph and the Amnesia Express were playing there. That was a great show.
Well, Milton, thanks for your call. If you want to call in, 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. We're talking about the late Gil Scott Heron, who's set to be honored as part of the Grammy festivities this weekend. And we're also talking about a Gil Scott Heron memoir that came out last month called The Last Holiday. And Larry McDonald, longtime percussionist for Gil, I wanted to play something for you. I told you a little bit earlier, Gil Scott Heron visited Soundcheck in February of 2009, and we were talking about, just a second ago, him being a collaborative musician.
Yeah.
He talked to us a little bit about giving credit to some of the people that he worked with and how important rhythm was to him.
The South African rhythm called gamboot is the one we use for Johannesburg, the samba, the liberation for the liberation song. They knew rhythms, Wawamanko, for a song called The Bottle, which is a celebration rhythm. They're teaching me about not just the rhythms, but what these rhythms were for, what sort of ceremonies, what sort of rituals they were used in. Gave me a grip on that so that I sort of knew what to say when I heard that rhythm, you know, and it was appropriate.
You see that black boy over there running scared? His old man in a bottle. He done quit his 9 to 5. He drink full time and now he's living in a bottle. See that black boy over there running scared? His old man got a problem. And it's a bad one. He ain't done.
Gil Scott Heron and The Bottle from the album Winter in America from 1974. My guest, Larry McDonald, tapping along on the table here. You can't resist. When you hear that song, it has such a stomping rhythm, it's impossible not to get into it. Now, I think we should do a fair trade here, Larry. I played a clip of Gil for you, but you also brought a clip for us, this clip from you and Gil performing in Scotland.
Yeah, this was at Edinburgh. It actually was hosted by Jamie Bing, who is the publisher,
the editor of the book, right?
He used to do this from time to time. He traveled with various configurations, you know, and he and I used to go out and work a lot as a duo. And this was where they're playing, and I'm not recognizing the rap that he's doing, you know, because I usually know what's coming up by what he's saying now. And then all of a sudden, he just went right into "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised." And it kind of flipped me because he doesn't do that really on live.
He told us when he was here at Soundcheck, yeah, he barely remembers all of those words.
Well, you'll hear that in the middle because I thought he was going out. So I brought the music down, and then he remembered the rest of it.
All right, well, let's hear some of it. This is Larry McDonald and Gil Scott Heron performing in Edinburgh, Scotland.
Now, Now, we did a poem a long time ago, and some of y'all's memories is better than mine, so if I miss some of the words, just fill them in your mind, okay? The poem said, "You will not be able to stay home, brothers." You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Coke in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not star Natalie Wood and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not be televised. NBC will not be able to break the whip. No, 832 on reports from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. For those of you who don't remember the poem, the revolution takes place in your mind. When you change your mind and decide about what side you're going to be on.
Gil Scott-Heron, backed up by my guest Larry McDonald, performing in Edinburgh, Scotland, remembering the words pretty well. I would never be able to remember all of those
words. No, but he went on after that, see? So.
Well, and of course, Gil Scott-Heron in Scotland, which is sort of a special place to Gil, as you find out in the book, his father played for Glasgow Celtic, a very, very huge soccer team around the world.
His father was one of Jamaica's most famous footballers, you know. So I got to put that in there.
We're gonna go back to Linnell in just a second, but let's take another call. Thomas is calling in from North New Jersey. Thomas, we just played "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised." What's your take on that song?
Man, Gil Scott was really defined my growing up, and something I get discouraged sometimes is that I hear "Revolution Not Be Televised," I hear the bottle, but Gil Scott wrote some of the most beautiful ballads that would just mean stop you and have you crying.
Like what?
You know, he had songs like "A Lovely Day." He has a song called "A Very Precious Time," and he talked about how he remembers this young lady's face, and so much that he could almost reach out and touch the warmth. I mean, a prayer for everybody in the world. There's just so many songs, ballads that he wrote that don't get "Peace Go With You, Brother." You know, "Lovely Day" was special for me because with all the things you hear Gil say, he's a line in that song where he says he walked outside and the flowers put on the color show just for me. And as the music's playing, you hear him in the background say, "Thank you very much." It's just subtle and gorgeous. And I think sometimes that's missed. I would love the Dill Scotts and the NDREs and those people in the world to get together and just do an album of his ballads. That, you can see the other side of Gil Scott-Heron.
A very good idea from Thomas, calling in from North New Jersey. Also, Thomas providing us with like a pretty solid playlist of good Gil Scott-Heron songs that we can play. So Larry McDonald's here with me in the studio. Also on the phone with us is the journalist Linnell George. She reviewed the new Gil Scott-Heron memoir that came out last month. Linnell, you said a little bit earlier that the book really doesn't go into his final years, the last 10 years of his life from about 2000 or so were filled with, there were drug arrests and a period of imprisonment and health issues. What does that say about a memoir? That seems to be a very big thing to leave out of the picture of this artist.
Right, and I guess from the publisher's notes that was a part of his life that he wasn't really wanting to write about. And so what we have to figure out is what's between all of that. He does hit on some things about the reason for leaving this memoir. He wanted his three kids to know a little bit more about who he was and where he came from. And this is the part of the legacy that he felt was important and that he wanted. That's the imprint he wanted to make. So that's the message you walk away with.
You know, Larry, you knew him during those final years of his life. He was struggling with so many different things, very publicly as well, too. I mean, his struggles are well documented in the media. But he was also working right up to the end.
Yes, he was.
And what was that like? Was he still had, even though his album output had really slowed in the 80s and kind of come to a halt in the 90s, he still had a drive to perform, it sounds like.
Yeah, he still wanted to perform. And the thing about him is you get him to the stage and you'll get a show, you know. And it was kind of difficult for me while a lot of the stuff was going on. But I had to make a decision, you know, whether I was going to make some character flaws or whatever, stop me from working with one of the greatest writers who ever walked here. Because, like, I have friends, not because they don't have any faults, but in spite of the faults that they have, you know.
And for someone who maybe doesn't know Gil Scott-Heron and looking past those 10 years, why is the reason that someone who doesn't know his work should pick up one of his albums?
Because he was talking about stuff that most people didn't want to talk about, and it from the very beginning of his work, you know. And I think one of the things that helped beat him down too, you know, he thought that by now, you know, somebody else would have stepped in and at least tried to talk about these things, you know. And I think he was kind of bummed out that that didn't happen, really.
Well, Larry, we're gonna have to leave it there. We're gonna end with a song that I think would please our caller that we just heard from before, yeah. Thomas. We're gonna leave with the song "Your Daddy Loves You."
Yeah.
Linnell George had just mentioned that this book is sort of targeted at his kids. Linnell George reviewed Gil Scott-Heron's memoir, "The Last Holiday," for the Los Angeles Times. She's also a professor of English and journalism at Loyola Marymount University. And with me here in the studio, Larry McDonald, the percussionist that played with Gil Scott-Heron for 30 years. To you both, Larry and Linnell, thanks so much for being on Soundcheck.
Thanks so much. Nice meeting you, Linnell.
Nice meeting you, Larry. Thank you, Joel.
Okay.
A whole lot of things on our minds. But lately, girl, we've been thinking that we were wasting time nearly all the time. And your daddy loves you.
The music of Gil Scott-Heron. You can check out what your fellow listeners are saying about our segment today on the Soundcheck page at wnyc.org/soundcheck. Still to come, the Irish rock group The Cranberries stop by the studio to perform a bit of their upcoming album, Live. And hey, speaking of live performances, you can join Soundcheck for a live taping with the Robert Glasper Experiment. And a special guest, the Grammy-nominated R&B artist Bilal. They'll join us on Monday, February 27th, live in the Green Space at 2 p.m. You can get your tickets now at wnyc.org/soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm Joel Meyer, in today for John Schaefer. After a decade of mainstream success with hits like Zombie and this song Linger, the Irish rock band The Cranberries called it a day in 2003, but they never ruled out a reunion. And a few years ago, the band teamed up again for a North American tour, and that tour led them back into the recording studio. And at the end of this month, the band will release Roses, their first album in 11 years. The Cranberries are here to give us a sneak peek at their new recording. This is the band with their new song, Raining in My Heart. It's The Cranberries live on Soundcheck. If I could fly, you know that.
fly.
Cranberries live on Soundcheck. The song is called Raining in My Heart. It's going to be included on the album Roses, which comes out a little bit later this month, February 28th. We're getting a sneak preview of the album live in the studio here on Soundcheck. Let me introduce you to the band. Noel Hogan playing guitar, Mike Hogan playing bass, Fergal Lawler is their drummer and playing some stripped down percussion for this acoustic set, and vocals from Dolores O'Riordan. Dolores, joining me at the microphone. Welcome to Soundcheck.
Hello, Joel. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. That was fantastic. We're getting a little bit of a sneak preview here.
Yeah.
I can see my cell phone is buzzing with tweets about people going, wait a minute, they're on Soundcheck? We didn't know there was an album coming out.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's great.
Let's talk a little bit about the band getting back together. You did a tour a couple of years ago. Why then to bring the band back together on stage?
Well, it wasn't something that was really kind of designed or, thought about. It just occurred like organically. We just ended up bumping into each other at Trinity College, where they made me a member of the Philosophical Society. Mm-hmm. And I called Noel and asked him if he'd come and play. They wanted me to perform a few songs, and then Mike and Noel came up and we hooked up. That was January 2009, and then that summer my son was being confirmed, and I asked the three lads to come to his confirmation, and all their kids came, and we had a big get together. And then after the confirmation and all that, we went for a few pints, and basically Mike said, let's get back together. There was pints involved, of course.
So this is the Trinity College, the position at Trinity College, et cetera.
That was what began it,
It's
yeah.
really like sorting it out at the pub. That really is what
really
happened.
Really, at the end of the day, yeah, it was kind of over a pint. Mike said, let's do it now because we're not getting any younger. So, yeah.
Well, with all the musicians that have come through the studio, reuniting, getting bands back together is a common theme. And what we hear sometimes from people is that there are things that they can get from, the old band that they can't get from solo careers or new things. Is that true for you and the Cranberries, that there's something that your chemistry provides that you can't find elsewhere?
Yeah. I mean, Mike, Ferg, and Noel have a great chemistry as musicians, and even, when I was a teenager and I met them, I could see that back then. But also, they're very well behaved. Seriously, they're so good. I mean, I've seen some serious rock stars, so no.
Do you maybe run a tight ship?
No, actually, do you know what? They are good lads, though, aren't you? They all go to bed when I tell them.
It's radio, so I will just tell the people out there, they are good lads.
Sure, they're grand.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, sure. They do know.
So, I mean, it's one thing to get a band back together for a live performance and what sometimes is like the natural element for musicians. It's a whole other thing to come together and try and put together a studio album. So was that difficult?
No, because you see, Noel and myself kind of, since the email thing came into play, and I learned how to email and got a computer and kind of came with technology, I started talking to Noel over email, and he was sending me bits of music. And I was kind of just, getting melodies and stuff like that. And so I had a load of stuff kind of pre-written in my head. And then by the time we, you know, got together in, what year was that, 2009? We had like about six songs, but we actually had three songs from this record that we had pre-recorded in 2003 before the hiatus. So it was kind of really a span over 10 years, like the material was written, over 9 years actually, yeah.
Where did you end up recording it?
We did 5 weeks in Toronto, and I think it was about 10 days in London. That was it then.
And do you live in Toronto or in Ontario?
Up north in Ontario, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And where in the rest? Where's the rest of the band based?
Limerick.
In Limerick, which is where you all were from in the when the band started out.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about what Limerick was like in the early 90s, and has it changed at all?
What was it like in the 90s?
Pretty miserable.
Yeah.
Lots of unemployment.
He wasn't very good in the 90s, no. Yeah, because I don't know, we were on tour, so I can't remember, yeah. Oh, God, that's a big oblivion in my brain. It's like, yeah, the 90s? Yeah, where was I? You know, I was just on flipping in, you know, I was probably in radio stations like I am now. Uh-huh. Lots of radio stations, lots of photo shoots, lots of work. And, yeah, from about 1990, we hit the road in 1990, and we didn't actually stop touring till 96, so okay. We went mental. And then we stopped.
So it's all a blur. Where did the 90s go?
Seriously? Yeah.
Well,
I can't. It was just work.
We're gonna give you some time to try and remember. Let's have you play another song. Will you play Tomorrow for us?
Yes.
All right. That's great. Yeah. Well, here are the Cranberries. This song is going to be on their new album, Roses, coming out on February 28th. This is the song Tomorrow, the Cranberries, live on Soundcheck.
You're mad, you spend a lot of time in your head. If you could come away with me, you could come away with me. If only you had some faith in me, tomorrow could be too late. I wish I could change that. Much time on your hands. To hell with conclusions. Why should we make so many plans? So you should come away with me. You should come away with me. You should have some faith in me. Tomorrow.
Change that.
The song is Tomorrow. The band is The Cranberries. They're playing live here in the Soundcheck studio. That song coming out on the new album Roses, the first album from The Cranberries in more than a decade, coming out on the 28th of this month. The Cranberries are kicking off their North American tour in New York on Friday, May 4th at Terminal 5. And if you want to watch them on TV, you can watch them on The View this Friday and on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno on Tuesday, February 14th. The vocalist Dolores O'Riordan joining me again at the microphone. So I gave you time to jog your memory about Limerick, but fortunately a Soundcheck listener has called in and just wanted to jog your memory. Nick from Long Island called in. He's a native of Abbey Field.
Oh, right, yeah.
Okay, what is Abbey Field?
It's over towards, it's down towards Kerry, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's Abbey Field. It's like, it's a place in the countryside.
It's a, like, so it's like, it's sort of a little rural sort
of. A village, a rural town.
Okay. Well, he's a big fan, and he, just hearing you on the air spurred him to call in and go, I'm from there. And,
oh, cool. Nice.
You were also talking about how long you were on the road in the 90s being kind of a blur.
Yeah.
You had very, very big hit albums, you know, those first few albums that were out selling millions of records. How old were you when the first hit?
Well, Mike was 16. I was 18. And we were, three of us were 18 and Mike was 16. He was a baby.
So seasoned veterans of the world. Sixteen and 18. Mike.
Yeah.
What was it like to be, 18 years old, selling millions of records and touring all over the world?
Busy, really. Very busy, actually. You know, it was like we were working a lot. And it was nice, but I don't think it really registered, like, because we were just, like, working an awful lot. So it doesn't really register in your head. And even though, you know, we used to walk into cafeterias or, you know, roadside diners, you know, happy eaters inside the road because, you know, you're pretty much in a bus and you're on the motorway pretty much all the time, truck stops and all that. But I just remember, like, just going into cafeterias and seeing our music on TV and kind of going, God, we're famous, are we? But you kind of didn't know it really because you were just working all the time, you know. And besides getting on stage, like, and seeing all the crowd and the punters and all that, it was grand, you know, it was brilliant. But it didn't really register in our heads, you know, to be honest. We were so busy, like, just, it wasn't until after when we went back to Ireland, I think, that we realised, oh, you know, we took a kind of a little break that, that life had changed immensely.
I just want to tell you, Dolores and the rest of the Cranberries, I've never had that moment where I've looked at the TV and said, God, I'm famous.
Yeah, I was kind of like, oh, God, yeah. What's that all about? You know?
Will we be able to handle this one? Or will we be train wrecks in a while?
Well, let's fast forward to the new record, Roses, that's coming out. I mean, the difference between then and now, you know, songs like Linger, the big hit, and Dreams, and Zombie, and now there's a big difference. You were selling millions and millions of records then, but selling records is not necessarily the business model for music anymore. How did that change your approach to making this record?
Well, I don't really think about the business side of things, and I don't really think Noel does either. I mean, we just kind of write music as we like it, so we've never really thought about it that way. I think that the world is always changing when it comes to music. I remember when we were kids, you know, there was cassettes and tape recorders and all that. You know, technology keeps changing, but I solemnly believe in my heart that a good song is a good song at the end of the day, and whatever happens, happens.
All right. Well, I think for Cranberries fans out there, we have a treat. After the show today, we're going to record one of your big hits. It shall remain nameless, just to tease people even further. And we're going to make it available as a web extra on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. We'll let you know about it if you subscribe to our Twitter feed or find us on Facebook, and we'll alert you when that's up there and you can hear it. So they're going to stick around. So I'm sort of saying goodbye to you on the air, but hello to you in about 2 minutes. So to Dolores and Noel and Mike and Fergal, thanks so much for being on the air with Soundcheck today.
Thanks for having us.
The Cranberries on Soundcheck.
Nice one.
Once again, the Cranberries are sticking around to record a performance of one of their hits. If you want to take a listen, subscribe to our Twitter feed at twitter.com/soundcheck. We'll send out a tweet when we've got the web extra posted on our page today. That's going to do it for our show today. Next time, now in its third season, fans of the FX crime drama Justified expect moonshine, murder, and a whole lot of music. We'll hear about how the show's soundtrack is shaped by its Appalachian setting. plus a live performance from country singer and Kentucky native Daryl Scott. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. We've also had help today from Margaret Bresnahan and Amy Pearl. I'm Joel Meyer in today for host John Schaefer. Thanks for listening. This is Soundcheck.